أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. السلام عليكم brothers and sisters. Inshallah, you all are doing well. Alhamdulillah, it's good to be here with you. We're going to have a session on diversity, inshallah. Right now, for just a brief introduction, my plan is to just go over a few traditions about Islamic Brotherhood as kind of an introduction to how we should deal with each other and how we should form relationships with each other. Then I'm going to talk very briefly about some of the difficulties in forming relationships with each other and why this doesn't always happen. Then inshallah, after this, Sheikh Osama will also give a brief introduction. And after that, I'm really looking forward to hearing your experiences and how you interact with your communities from across the United States, because it's very educational for myself to learn about the difficulties and the hardships that the Mu'mineen are facing across the nation. So I'm really looking forward to this session. Now, to mention these traditions, they're all from Imam Ali alayhi salam. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Imam Ali says, adopt the friendship of true believers and increase in your acquisition of them, for they're an asset in times of prosperity and a shield during affliction. Now, the important point of this that I want to mention for our session is the Imam is encouraging us to increase our friends, the number of friends we have within the community, and the type of friend that is mentioned are true believers. So the quality of people who we're trying to befriend is that they're a believer. Imam Ali alayhi salam also says, brotherhood for the sake of Allah is fruitful. And this, he's pointing to the intention. Right, so we're supposed to befriend true believers, but why? The intention is for Allah. So we befriend them in order to get closer to Allah. Furthermore, Imam Ali alayhi salam says, a man whose friendship is not for the sake of Allah must be avoided, for his friendship is vile and his company is doomed. So this is the other side. So if you recognize that someone is trying to befriend you, but for a worldly purpose, right, then you should be careful. You should take a step back and examine the situation, right, because it probably won't end well for you. Then he continues, another one. A man whose brotherhood is for the sake of Allah is bound to gain. Right? Man akha fi Allah qunum, wa man akha fi dunya hurum. While a man who seeks brothers for the sake of this world is bound to lose. Right? So again, we're talking about intention here. The intention is for Allah. So we want to create strong bonds of friendship with the believers for Allah. And finally, the last tradition I'm going to mention, the best of your brother is one whose friendship, again, is for the sake of Allah. Now, of course, there's a lot that could be said in explanation about what it means for Allah and why, but right now I don't want to take up too much time because I want to hear from you guys, and maybe we'll get into that towards the end. I also wanted to mention a couple difficulties, because it seems like, all right, these traditions are telling us to be friends with believers, so therefore we're going to be all best friends and it's very easy and there's no problems with that. The problem is it's not easy. Right? For a number of reasons, it's not easy. One of the reasons might be on an individual basis, where the brother who's a believer, or the sister, of course, their company might not be nice. They might not be someone you like to be around. Right? I could give many examples. There's one brother, for instance, in Sydney, true believer. I like him a lot. You know, I love him. But he's not well-versed in social etiquette. So sometimes it's a little difficult being around him because he might say something out of place every now and then, or he might do something out of place. So someone whose friendship is not for Allah is gonna, there's no way they're gonna befriend this person. But if you want to befriend someone for Allah, you know, this is easy. Now, that's on an individual basis, and that might not pertain too well to this topic. But on a social basis is what we want to discuss. So socially, the norm is people form cliques. People form groups, right? So you have, in some major cities, you have multiple communities where the different masajid are, what's it called, apart from each other. They don't interact well with each other. The members of these masjids only go there and they form this group. You also have communities where there's one masjid. And within that masjid, and it could be a large community as well, but within one single masjid, there's the formation of groups within this masjid, right? And each group considers themselves different from the rest, considers themselves maybe even better from the rest. And the interaction between these cliques within this one masjid sometimes leads to fights, sometimes leads to separation in the formation of new masjids, and usually it's ugly. Now, it's not something that's strange, though, that the people form cliques. People form cliques for a number of reasons. Because with age, right? You'll be around people of similar age. Interests, professions, and in a lot of cases, especially in the Muslim communities, race is an issue within a masjid, that people will hang around with members of their own race and they won't interact with members of other races. Now, when this becomes really dangerous is when that race starts feeling that they're better than others. Because one of the normal human feelings is that once you form this group, you want your group to be better because you're part of that group. So you want to be part of the best group, right? So you have this opinion that your group is better than the others. And then you start looking down on the other people. You might start making comments on other groups, and this is about race, it's not about Islam. Now, if I tie it into the beginning of the speech was about friendship. We're supposed to befriend true believers. We're also supposed to befriend for Allah. So if we're forming these groups, these cliques on racial, boundaries because of, different races, and we're befriending the people in order to, feel accepted, right? As a social, as a type of social club. Right? And then we're belittling people that are in the other cliques because of race, then this causes huge problems. And it's something I've seen in the communities. Now, I don't want to speak about solutions right now because that will be at the end of the program. So I'm going to hand it over to Sheikh Osama, who's going to basically lay down the tone for the program today. And then, inshallah, I'm really looking forward to hearing your guys' experiences. Because I know I have, I'm a convert like some of you here, and I had to integrate into a community, and I had difficulty doing that as well. And I really want to hear if your guys' experiences are similar to mine or different, and I'm really looking forward to that. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Alaykum as-salam wa rahmatullah. A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Wassalatu wassalamu ala sayyidina wa maulana abil qasim al-mustafa Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Wa ala ahli bayt al-tayyibin al-tahirin al-ma'asumin la siyama baqiyatullah fil aradhin. Dear brothers and sisters, what I was thinking to do was the following. Let's just think about this as a question. How important is this topic, the idea of us fostering diversity in our communities for the coming of the 12th Imam? How big of an obstacle is it if there is racism, for instance, or Shias are ethnocentric and they're not accepting of one another? How big of a problem is that as far as the return of the Imam of the time, being an example and inviting other people to this wonderful religion? If we think that it is a really big problem, and it is, then why is a gathering like this so important? Why choose this topic for this kind of a gathering? Brothers and sisters, because you're from so many different communities, either now or in the future. We don't always start in one community and end up in that same community. We might start in one community and end up moving in another community. If we can carry this message wherever we are, then that would again be something that we're doing to hasten the reappearance of the 12th Imam. Now, how I wanted to get help from you, brothers and sisters, and we're hoping that it becomes interactive in this way, in three areas. One of them, and actually one of the reasons that I wanted to have a moderator here is for the following. I'd like to get experience, brothers and sisters, but I don't want it to be the case that one person starts talking and then that kind of, we started half an hour late. I don't know how much time they're going to give us this evening. So I was thinking that contributions from the brothers and sisters in the audience could be limited, inshallah, to 2 minutes max. Also, if you're saying something that's already been repeated by others, no sense in repeating that. Rather, we just want other people to hear the experiences and then after that to come forward with some solutions. Sometimes in topics which are on sensitive issues, I've noticed that the talk basically becomes a griping session. There's something that we say in the African American community, sometimes I'm gonna tell somebody about themselves. Right? So for instance, let's say I use a session like this and I would explain and it was negative and I tell everybody how negative it is, what negative experience I have. I told them about themselves. But for us as believers, we're looking for solutions. We have an audience here. People have come from across the nation, even from outside of America, Australia, Canada, other places. People have come together for the cause of the Imam, and then we're going to take this message back. So how can we get a message that's useful for everybody? I don't want to silence people also, though, and say, don't share your experiences which have been negative. I think, rather, it's a good idea for us to hear what people are going through, what it's like to come to some of the masajid, what some of our sisters are feeling, right? What we're feeling even amongst those who have been born Muslim and are from a Muslim nation, meaning their forefathers are from a Muslim nation. We need to hear that also. So in three areas, I wanted to get contributions from the audience. One of them, the first one, were some negative experiences about the lack of diversity in our communities. So we can all hear, we can all feel what actually is happening, what's going on, what it's like in the communities. So one of them is some negative experiences, and then we'll have to again divide the time that we have left so that we also hear some positive experiences. What are some good experiences that we've had of interacting with others, being accepted, steps that we're taking in the right direction? And then finally, after those two sessions, then solutions from the audience. Now, myself, I'll be trying to, inshallah, to take notes. Sheikh Hamad is also here. We may even add a little bit of something to some of the statements that are made, just to make sure that everybody understands. And then after that, the solutions is the really important part. What we can do as a community going forward, so that we end up in a better place and the Imam is more happy with us. So those three areas. First of all, some of the negative experiences people have had, then some of the positive experiences, and then the bulk of our time for solutions, and then we'll finally have some comments in the end, inshallah. So having said that, I don't know if you want to.
So inshallah, we will have the microphones here. I would like to give opportunity to both the Mu'minat as well as the Mu'mineen. So we'll go one on this side and one that side. If there is nothing on either of the side, then whoever is available, and the volunteers, make sure that whoever is raising their hand first gets in the line. So, and we are going to have we can have about 15 minutes negative, 15 minutes positive, and then the solutions. I guess if you want to start positive, it's positive too, either way. So there's a hand from Californian here, straight up, young. Okay, you can take that mic. One mic on this side, one mic on that side.
People don't have to stand up either. They can just sit and...
Yeah. So, brother, if you can start if you want. The mic is coming. You're from San Jose, California. No? Los Angeles, California. No. right here. San Diego, the famous zoo. There's a lot of diversity in that zoo. Come on. Okay, with the volunteers. If you don't have the mic, it's going to go to the other side.
Yeah.
So, there is a sister. While the men get ready, we can start with the sister. Go.
Assalamu alaikum, brother. This is negative and positive, I would say. You know, one of the student was called ISIS in an elementary school. So what I did was when I went to the principal and I said that, you know, it's not the problem that you are going to penalize the student who has called the other student as ISIS. It's the problem because you guys are not doing anything to teach the kids what the difference is between the Muslims and who is an ISIS. So then, you know, the principal really looked, and then I talked about how India, you know, we had created diversity in India, is Hindus, Muslims, you know, we know each other, we celebrate each other's festivals. So then, I said, I came here 30 years back, and now, still after 30 years, there is still not diversity in America. So if you raise the question as part of the America is having a problem with diversity, then they offer to hold classes for all three faiths in their elementary school. So I would say this is negative and positive, wherein we can use the lack of diversity to preach what's really needed for us, working for us.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. It works now. My name is Ali. I'm from San Diego, California. I reverted to Islam and then I converted to Shiism. And I would like to touch upon diversity within our community, within our masajid, as it relates both to born Muslims as well as converts. So I did not convert to Shiism through the masjid. The masjid has zero active dawah program, nor do they have a capture and, you know, support system. Unfortunately, and while we do have great programs for the youth, and I'm not saying that it's the worst thing in the world, and I'm not trying to, you know, lambast anybody, but unfortunately, I do see a big problem of people kind of hanging on, of young people hanging on the thread as far as it comes for their faith. Some people leaving their religion. I've seen people come to me during Ramadan, young kids younger than me, come to me on Ramadan during the Shahada of Imam Ali and tell them that they're mad because their girlfriend broke up with them. And this is a real problem. Unfortunately, in our center in particular, we have a great Maulana. Unfortunately, we have a system of board of directors, and because of that, there's a lot of stonewalling as far as the youth being involved with the creation of their programming. Because of that, the programming is mostly geared towards making the masajid a social club for old Iranian men, and I don't mean that in a offensive way, and not that we shouldn't cater to all ages and all languages and all things like that, but masajid should be a spiritual hospital in a way, and we kind of are in a rut. We're trying to reform things. We're trying to sit down on the table, find a way to make everybody happy. There are Farsi programs throughout the week for people who want that. But the English program seems to be like, there's even an obstacle just for that. And in some ways, there's no catering to the youth or what the problems and the social peer pressures that all the young people even younger than me, are going through. And so I would hope when we discuss the solutions, how we can, because there are other masjids in Southern California that I've been to that are wonderful. They are very active with their youth. They provide programs that actually address concerns that people have with the actual issues of, that youth face. We had one speaker during Muharram, Sheikh Hazaruni, who came in and discussed these issues. For example, he gave a story of one person whose child, you know, mashallah, they heard them pray Fajr every morning in their room. One day, the surah stopped.
Two minutes.
Oh yeah, sorry. Basically, when he kind of put these issues in the forefront, You know, it was met with a negative reaction, and there was unfortunately even a lot of, I wouldn't say riba because that's behind the back, in front, it was in front of his face during the lectures. How can we better cater it so that both born Muslims and converts can strengthen their iman rather than it be just a social club for one particular ethnic group? Thank you.
Thank you. Just for the audience, I'll raise my hand if you're going above 2 minutes.
There you go.
Assalamu alaikum. Maulana, thank you for coming and enlightening us with your lectures. Basically, I've got a couple of observations. I think that if you look at the lack of diversity in my generation, I'm 65. If you look at the backgrounds that we have come from very homogeneous backgrounds. You know, we have come from cities which were very homogeneous. So diversity was never an issue when we were growing up. And there is that inherent problem of trust, even within the, you know, Shia community and Shia brothers, and let alone from converts. So that is something which over time, I think, you know, will have to change. But on a positive side, I feel that the younger generation who are growing up here, seeing the diversity, are much more acceptable. So there is a less, you know, I think, inertia against people from different backgrounds with the younger generation than you know, in my generation. I think in my generation, it is the acceptance of son-in-laws and daughter-in-laws that are from a different cultural background. And that is, I think, a challenge that has to be overcome. And then one last point I want to make is that we are talking about diversity. I think what we are facing, which the brother has also alluded to, is we have problems of intra-Shia interactions, you know, where the majority of the attendees here are more than likely going to be Indian and Pakistani, where we have got a huge Arab community and maybe Iranian community, and you don't see that diversity even in this organization or even in this attendance. Then we have, I think, in, you know, inter-Muslim interactions, where that also seems to be less, where we are not interacting with other Sunni brothers and so forth. Again, there is some inertia. And then you can go to interfaith. So, you know, there are three levels at which we have to, you know, deal with this problem, inshallah. Thank you.
Is it my turn? Okay. Assalamu alaikum. I'm coming from the Indianapolis community. I moved there in November, and I've had a chance to see how it works and what's going on there a little bit. It's a primarily Arab and Pakistani population with a few converts and a few Iranians. And a lot of the converts have voiced to me already in the short time I've been there that they've always had this suspicion towards them, this feeling that Islam is not really for you, you're not really Muslim, you're just a white person or just a black person, and we are the real Muslims. And then from the, because I'm a Pakistani Muslim, raised in America with the same values as maybe the white convert sister, but with the same perspective, I can share the perspective. I can see where the Pakistanis feel a little bit threatened and don't really have the same cultural communication style, the same way of speaking, or the same respect of elders, or like I'm older than you, you're younger than me kind of dynamic, which can, they can take certain things as hostile when, for example, an American white person thinks that they're just speaking respectfully and academically. I can see how the Desi uncle can be offended. So I guess to pose a solution, because I can see what's going on, in the short time that I've been there, I've taken it as my responsibility to bridge a gap between the two populations and notice and realize that both parties, for example, in this situation, have assets that they bring to the community. Both of them are valid points, and we're not trying to make it purely Islamic, no culture, no vibrancy community center, and we're not trying to make it a purely Desi or purely Arab community center either. The culture is necessary. So trying to bridge those two gaps and show each party that there are assets that the other person is bringing. So when you see what's happening in front of you, that it's a diversity issue, try to be a bridge towards that. And I will mention, the brother was saying, things were more homogenous back in Lahore or Karachi or wherever. There was diversity in perspective and in personality, but people learn how to bridge those diversities. They can learn how to bridge the obvious ones like color of skin too. It's just a matter of learning. It's a one step up. So inshallah, khair.
Assalamu alaikum. I just want to bring up an experience I had about 40 years ago. Being a follower of Ahlul Bayt is a big gift. Many of us were born into it, but it's not something we should just keep to ourselves. It should not be very selfish. And you know, when you have something, you have a good thing with you, you have to share it with others. About 40, 50 years ago, I grew up in Tanzania, which is in East Africa. I'm a Khoja Shia. My ancestors were converts from Hinduism. And to give an example, we had a resident alim, Maulana Said Akhtar Rizvi, who learned Swahili, and he converted thousands of indigenous people. And for a while, the local community, the Khoja community, was very resistant to that. They said, you know, we are not comfortable. We are more used to seeing, when you say Shia, we mean Khoja. And so, you know, and that was short-sighted. And if you go to Tanzania now, about 50 years later, you see a whole new generation of Shias who are indigent. And you know, you see alims coming from that indigenous community. So we have to stop being selfish. You know, when a 12th imam comes, and he's an Arab, and when he comes here and we say, no, God forbid, you know, we'll read Qasida for you, but he won't come and associate with you. So to look at the whole situation, you have to be more open to diversity. Being in the United States has an advantage. We are multicultural, you know, it's a melting pot, and eventually we will all get together, and you know, and it's a unique community. You get to meet Iranis and Afghanis and Pakistanis and Lebanese and everybody, and we come together, which we could not do in our own home countries. So it's a big advantage.
Thank you. Maybe one more. They're kind of doing both negative and positive.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think. There was a sister at the back also who had raised the hand, but maybe she doesn't raise it anymore.
Assalamu alaikum. I just want to make a quick comment, you know, about this. You know, a sister talked about she's from Indianapolis and how the community is together. You know, it's a small town, it's not big, and right now the Arabs and the few Persian people and few Pakistani people are together. But if you go back into bigger cities, you see how much we are non-diverse. You go in a bigger city, Houston, New York, New Jersey, and you see what you see. This is a Pakistani Imam Bargah. This is a Khoja Imam Bargah. Hyderabadi Imam Bargah, this is Irani Imam Bargah, this is Arab Imam Bargah. We in bigger cities, we have so much polarization, lack of tolerance. The moment the community grows up, we start diversing. I have been in other cities, I don't want to mention specific name. We used to be together, the first divorce happened between Pakistanis and Indians and Persians. The Persians split off, they made their own Imam Bargah, and Pakistani and Indians were together. 5 years down the road, Pakistani could not tolerate Indian and Khojas. So Khojas made their own Imam Bargah, Pakistanis had their own Imam Bargah. So this is the reality of today. And these people need to be educated. And the first thing you said, Sheikh Osama Abdul Ghani, that the coming of Imam, he's going to come and say, you cannot be united among yourself, even between the Pakistan subcontinent people, you cannot tolerate each other. Anyway, this is my comment. I don't want to bring any, you know. Thank you very much.
They come for the same good biryani, right? They share the biryani pretty good though.
Assalamu alaikum. Just a quick question from a youth perspective. Like, I have young children who have come to college in Detroit, and they are having problem with the, like a roommate. I said, find a mu'min, find a Muslim, find a two for, and then they turn back and tell to me, Mom, I can't even tell you. Some of them over here are worse in their character. I would rather have a white roommate. What do we do then?
Yeah, we're not going to the solutions yet, but we got your comment. Thank you. Yes. Oh, 1 second. I don't want to get in trouble later on. So we're going to one this way and then this way.
Yeah. Well, my question was already been, my comment was already been given by Brother just now. Well, I just want to tell you that during, when I was a child, what my grandparents taught me was that this, your is the best religion in the world, you are the best sect in the world, and you are the best blue blood kind of Shia, ethno-linguistically, you are the best, and the others are inferior to you. That's what we have been taught. But now what I'm teaching my children is that the best thing is the taqwa, which should be, you know, whatever. So this brother just mentioned me about the different ethno-linguistic groups in different Imam Bargahs, and they think that they are the best, superior of all, you know, Punjabis and, you know, Hyderabad, Dakhan and Lucknow and all that. My other question for the, my very brief comment is going to be regarding the interfaith diversity, which is being retarded because of the material which is spoken from the Mimbar-e Rasool. I cannot invite my close friends from other sects and other communities to come and listen to them, because what has been spoken from the member is repels them to come in the future, and when I spoke to the management committee, they said no, this is a part of our religion to say this, all these things. So that is one reason the interfaith cannot be promoted as it should be.
I'm from the Sabha Community Center from San Jose, and we have a very large community center with all kinds of people from Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan, India. There are a lot of converts coming, and I think Maulana Nabi Raza has a lot to do with that. He's brought all of these different cultures together, and I think the leadership has a big role to play in bringing these people together.
Thank you, and I can second that. I'm from IEC Houston, and a very, very diverse community. It boils down to leadership. Thank you.
Assalamu alaikum. My name is Hussein. I'm a local, and I'm a high schooler. So generally, I go about my business, you know, just going around. My school is primarily, most are Middle Eastern, Arabs, and some Lebanese and all that. So usually, they're not, even at the high school level, they're not inclusive. Usually they'll call me out and say, hey, white boy, come over here. I want to talk to you. People even debate. Excuse me. So even in high school, you know, people debate whether, you know, people call me white boy, you know? I look like a classic white person to most people. Like, hey, white boy, come over here. People, I've even seen once before, only once, people debated whether I was Arab or white. It's completely ridiculous. But even at the high school level, they don't include very many others just because of how people look. And once before, so somebody greeted me in Arabic, you know, Assalamu alaikum. I said, Alaykum as-salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. They were like, what? You speak Arabic? I don't necessarily fluently speak Arabic, but I know the little bits that count. So he goes up to this other guy, and then this guy, what I assume, says an insult to me. I'm not too sure, you know, exactly what it was, but, you know, it was an awkward moment. And that just goes to show, even at the high school level, they'll not include other races.
We're going to wrap up in the next minute or so, so we'll have maybe one or two.
Yeah.
Okay. Assalamu alaikum. My name is Maria Estrada. I'm originally from San Diego, but I recently moved to Houston. I've been in different states, and my main question was, what are some things we can do in order to make some of the boards from the Imam Bargas that we have more progressive? I've noticed that sometimes there's a lot of antagonism against a lot of the progressive thoughts that we have, because some of the people who run the board are much older than we are and also come from a very different cultural background. And I've even witnessed sometimes board members who are antagonistic to even scholars that are resident scholars. So I just wasn't sure if there's something that we can do to better that and make it more progressive.
Thank you. What, one more? Or two more?
The solution to that is that we have a very young person in as part of our board to represent the youth. So that might help, you know, in bridging the gap between the seniors and the juniors.
We're going to go for positive solutions now. So all the negatives are done with. So if you have positive comments.
Okay. Just before we go on, there's some other kind of almost obvious things that I've seen or I've heard about in some of the communities, and they weren't mentioned. I wanted to just share a little bit about what the danger is when we're not welcoming. So there's some communities where, based on the color of your skin, for instance, you don't feel very welcome when you come in. And there's people who feel that way. The negative reaction of that has been that sometimes people who've converted to Islam, they've told me personally, they said it's been 2 years since I've come to a masjid because of how I've been treated. Sometimes when you go to some of the masjid, sisters will tell you, and I'm not only talking about people of color, because sometimes it's within, I'm Arab, or even amongst Arabs, for instance, Lebanese versus Iraqi, for instance, or amongst, the brothers are saying, Pakistanis, or Hojas who are from East Africa, or Hojas, right? There's a lot of these things. I'm talking about the negative experiences. What happens is, with some of the negative experiences, the people will say then, I haven't been to a masjid in 2 years. Now imagine, let's say, somebody comes to Islam, they convert to Islam, they're now a Muslim, and I haven't been to a masjid, even in Muharram, in 2 years. If that person has children who didn't choose Islam, like the adult, what happens to those children who aren't coming to the masjids, who don't feel welcome? So how much of it is a responsibility for us to find out what's going on, and then after that, to talk about solutions and what we need to do? Now, if you guys don't mind, so that's one of them. The other issue that's really a big issue, maybe we can also help out, is the issue of marriage. Sometimes some families are very strict about you're only going to marry somebody who's from our particular background. If you want to marry somebody, you want to suggest some, then they put so much pressure on that individual, right? And then those communities which ignore the Islamic teachings and don't marry on the base of taqwa, we have hadith about what happens if you reject a suitor based on these non-Islamic values. The hadith say there will be fitna and fasad. You have in some communities, and I've gone to some of these communities, where the kids marry outside of the deen. The parents decided that we're not going to go based on taqwa and iman and these things, and the kids are now marrying outside of religion altogether. Right? So some of those dangers. So I'm not saying that there's some obvious negative points that weren't brought up. Alhamdulillah, at least we're aware, we're thinking of it. Now let's start to look for
very briefly, if there are some positive experiences we can share, examples that we have of people who did make efforts to reach out, who did make us feel welcome. This is also inspiration for us. And then after that, solutions. So the good points, actually, we'll have to keep it very brief just because we don't have much time. After that, solutions, and then we'd like to have some points to wrap up with also. So any positive?
So any positive, please.
Assalamu alaikum. You're stressing on the positive, but I got the mic before you said positive, so. It's just a comment. I wouldn't say it's a positive or a negative. Alhamdulillah, the community here, you know, I'm from Michigan, so it's a great community. People are very welcoming. But I just wanted to make a point that we, and not necessarily what I am saying is just reflective of our community here, but anywhere, any masjid that you go to, there, if there is a diversity, maybe not as obvious in color, but definitely there is diversity in the way people think. Not everybody would think exactly the way that, you know, maybe the board members think, or maybe, you know, some of the older population, when, because the times have changed. Their time was establishing the masjid. Now our time is fighting Islamophobia, you know, making our place known in the American society. So whether it is, it, whether we have to deal with, Islam is not one way, like my way or highway. I would look at it as it is a highway, but there are different lanes in that highway. It's a 10-lane highway, like in California, Houston, wherever. So there are different ways to go to God. So if we shun some people saying, oh, your way is not the right way, only my way is the right way, I think that our youth is getting quite disappointed in that way of thinking. And you know, from what I understand, you know, I don't consider myself to be a very pious person, but from what I personally understand of religion, Allah has given us a way. It's a very personal religion, our religion, and there are different ways of getting to Allah. And yes, definitely, you know, the alims and the maraji do help us in getting to them. So I think the community should not kill creativity, but it should definitely encourage that, you know, it's haram, then I understand it. But if it is not haram, let it go. You know, sometimes we are just caught up in mustahabbat and, you know, and this is the right way to do it and it's not the right way. I think there are very many ways to go to Allah, and we should accept and encourage that, especially because we have a different generation growing up in our masajid and not the same as we were growing up to be.
MashaAllah, thank you.
Assalamu alaikum. I'm also a revert, convert to Islam, and I think one thing when I first became Muslim, what really impressed me, and actually especially the followers of Ahlul Bayt, they really take this for granted, but it really is something that affects, at least when non-Muslims see it, in a very profound way, and that is the first year that I went to Muharram, in Bell Gardens. It's a city outside of Los Angeles in California, and Jafaria Hall. And I saw the like enthusiasm that they had when they did the matam, when they did the majlis, when they did it with like vigor, and they did it with spirit, and they did it with enthusiasm, and the energy is just, I was like, these people, they really believe in this, and they're really willing, they really believe in it with all their heart. I mean, and it's different, I guess, you know, I was raised as a Christian, and in, you know, in church, it's like a lot of Christians, I mean, you go to church and you sit in the back and a lot of people fall asleep, and some of people listen to the radio. But I'm saying, so it's basically, it's a thing, kind of a ritualistic thing that you go through, but there's no really spirit. So I mean, I think actually when we do Muharram, we should actually do it in a more public way. So the non-Muslims can see, so they can actually get some kind of experience and know that we live in their community and we really believe in this. And we're really willing to go out, put ourselves out there for this. So I think that's a big positive. Yeah.
Assalamu alaikum, Maulana. I just wanted to say that after growing up a long time around mostly Desi, around the age 29, 30, I met a very tight group of reverts. And even though I was born Muslim, I was quickly accepted because we all had one mission, and that was to be better Muslims and be closer to Allah and be the kind of people that our Imam would want us to be. And every time we get together, it's about, okay, what can I do to help you be a Muslim, a better Muslim, a better sister, or a better brother? So when you come from all different backgrounds, then you're not a clique anymore. You're just people who want to be closer to God. And you give each other multiple perspectives to go to the same place. That's just my experience.
Thank you.
Assalamu alaikum. As far as the solutions are occurred, one person brought up like putting a member of the youth.
We are still in positives.
Yes, this is for the solutions.
No solutions yet. Solutions will be the next. So okay, keep your thought there. Positives. Okay, we'll. Yeah. One or two, and then we'll go.
Assalamu alaikum. I'm from Chicago. It's a really diverse city. You have many different people coming into the masjid, and in the Imam Barga that I usually go to, whether it's Muharram or Majlis in Ramadan, like, you see many different people of all different colors, or maybe someone's a convert that just became a convert and saw. Because the Imam Barga is so public in a way, I feel like a positive thing about that is that they're more accepting and much more welcoming. And another thing, as our previous brother has said about making the Matam and Muharram more public, I feel like that's one thing they do in Ashura. We do a Julus in downtown Chicago. We usually go around, I think, downtown. It's a whole event that we have. And I feel like they really get back to our needs as well, which I think is another pro of Imam Barga. And that's really it. Thank you.
Yeah, we can go to solutions, but since two people brought up Julus and its diversity, how many in your cities have Julus for Muharram? Okay, keep your hands like that. How many have English speeches on the roads in those Juluses? How many have English Nohas? Coming down. Okay. So I was trying to give the message that we need to start giving the message to whatever people we are trying to do. If you're going to do Punjabis and Hindi and Urdu and Farsi and Arabic, we're not giving that message. So the young youth should start doing some good English Nahas. Thank you. We're going to solutions now.
Assalamu alaikum. I still have a positive.
Last positive. Thank you.
When I moved from DC area to Toronto, I was teaching in the madrasa, and I'm a convert since 1979. And the Maulana was watching me. It was in a high school. He watched everywhere I went. I felt like he was watching me. And I, of course, I was married and I had children already. And I called my friend in DC and I said, what is that? I don't know what's going on. And she said, you're like a sheep to him. He has to protect you. So I understood that the Malanas or the Alims, they have to take care of the converts, their children, and then that extends to the community. So the community has to take care of us because we're vulnerable. So it was a positive experience, even though it seemed it was very odd. Do you understand?
Anybody for solutions? Solutions? Yeah. Good. Brother, solutions. No, you're not going to, oh, sorry.
Solutions.
You were already there in that solution. He's already in that line for solutions.
Go ahead.
Go. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. So as far as solutions go, we have a youth group, alhamdulillah, that works separately from the masjid, although we do work within the masjid as well. We came up with the idea of potentially maybe trying to get a member of the youth on a masjid board of directors, being like a youth representative. But we figured it might just be like sending one of them, you go have the headache and deal with that, rather than all of us going together. And we also found out that they don't meet very often. So, you know, things that we want to get done soon, you know, we've done on our own. We've put together camps on our own, and we've done that with our Molana. And we've done it with maybe like one or two board members, not like as a whole of them having a decision in a formal meeting. So we figured, you know, while we are trying to reform things within the board, we're going to have a meeting. One of the things we want to try to do is put complete autonomy of the English program under our control of the youth. So that where there's no worry about censorship when it comes to dealing with youth issues or Quds Day or anything like that. And then we also do programs outside of the masjid. So we be the change we want to see. For example, we had a Malcolm X movie showing of the documentary. The first time ever non-Muslims came to our masjid. Sunnis came to our masjid and prayed behind us because we put out the word to the public. And that's the, you know, that was made me so happy because like some of the brothers said, you know, we shouldn't keep this for ourselves. The light of Ahlul Bayt should be shined to the public, and I'm glad that the Julus will be brought up, got brought up, because we want to try that too. Inshallah, I'll bring that up.
Thank you. Awesome. He was talking about camps. I would like to plug one camp. Camp 313 is coming August 19th and 21st weekend. Sheikh Abdul Ghani, Sheikh Zaidi is in the back, Sheikh Hamza Saudagar, and Al-Faraj, sorry, the name is Al-Faraj. Camp Al-Faraj, you can still enroll. That's a very good idea. As part of solutions, you can give an experience, inshallah. Yeah, sisters.
Assalamu alaikum.
There's one sister way out in the back. The lady, yes, she's part of Code Pink.
Assalamu alaikum. I just wanted to offer a solution for Muslims to kind of integrate into more so like the non-Muslim communities. I think that sometimes, like when, you know, we're questioned about like certain holidays or why we do certain things, we're very like quick to, you know, explain, and we don't really take the time, because, you know, everything that we do in Islam is very beautiful. So why do you have to be Muslim to see the beauty in it? So, like, for example, like, I at my work, I had someone ask me, like, what exactly Ramzan was and all that stuff. So, you know, maybe someone just would say, oh, it's the month in which we fast. But if you just take that route and be very quick with it, the opposite party would be like, oh, you fast, so that's so hard, this and that. But if you take the time to explain, oh, we fast, that's one part of it, you know, we, you know, seek nearness to Allah, this and that, maybe they would, you know, also see the beauty in things. But that's basically my solution. Just take the time to educate people and don't be afraid to explain, you know, why we do certain things and all that.
Thank you.
One solution that we found very successful in our community, we're here from Dearborn, is exposure, and that is exposing different ethnicities to each other. us in the Lebanese community in Dearborn, we've grown really close to the Zainabia community in Walled Lake and the other Metro Detroit areas. And it was mainly through getting together in the beginning, the ulama coming, we shared ulama for Muharram and Shahar Ramadan, and through that we would be interacting with each other in gatherings and in the masajid. And over time, brotherhood was built and sisterhood was built amongst our wives as well. And alhamdulillah, like, we start to see that they're just like us, we're just like them. Even the younger brothers who are now being exposed more and more, when they come, at first they'll be hesitant, and then they'll see that, you know, well, let's play basketball with each other, and they'll see, oh, they're just like me. You know, they play basketball just like me. The only time ever comes up, you know, we get reminded that we're, you know, different is when we eat the spicy food from the Pakistanis, and we're like, oh yeah, that's right, you know. But besides that, exposure has been one of the keys to, you know, merging the two communities together. And alhamdulillah, we've had plenty of progress in the past few years, and it's mainly through the ulama, alhamdulillah.
Thank you. Well, Zainabia, keep the spice down. That's the message. There's one sister there.
Yes. Okay. Assalamu alaikum. I feel like, to go off of what Ali was saying from San Diego, we've been trying the kind of bottoms-up approach for a while, right? Like creating third spaces, creating more grassroots movements to create diversity, or to at least welcome diversity and be more open. I feel like we need to couple that with a top-down approach as well, which is to seek the right leadership to begin with. So instead of, for example, creating boards for masajid, why not bring in an alim? Why not bring in an alim before we even create a masjid? Because I think with a lot of communities that do welcome everyone, I've seen the common theme is usually a really good alim who is open-minded. So I feel like we need to take a more holistic approach to this, because all of our problems are interlinked. It's not just diversity that we struggle with. It's also the concept of wilayat. We are Shias, but we still don't understand the concept of wilayat. So I feel like we need to couple both approaches, and I know many communities are very far behind in one or the other, but I think together they would create the perfect balance, inshallah.
Yes.
Assalamu alaikum. Assalamu alaikum. My name is Ahmad Atris, and I'm the chairman of the board of trustees in for Al Mahdi Center in Arizona. And I would like to talk about a little bit, you know, solutions. We have to know first about the lives of our Prophet and Imams, alayhi salam. We have to know that our Prophet, before he became a Prophet, he was an activist. He worked in solving, you know, lots of conflicts among the tribes, you know, of the Arabian at that time. Each one of our Imams used to go, you know, to the community there, and really from home to home be active, you know, and try to resolve solutions, to give solutions to the communities. Now, from my experience for all those years, I have noticed that we are lacking. We need more ulama. And the imam, when he comes to the community, they need to know that they are the leaders of the community, not just to make a speech and go home. They have to be involved in establishing committees. They have to establish relationship with other churches, you know, other centers. They have to be active with the government, with the state, with all the offices. They have really to take more responsibilities than just going, doing speech and going home. They are the leaders. And they have really to manage the community, organize it in a way. You see, we talk about like diversity. If the imam is not galvanizing the community, you know, once the imam does that, then all the diversity issues, they will go away. So I have really seen lots of problems, you know, with the imams, and I'm not trying to criticize them. They are doing a good job, but they really have to expand, you know, in their way. For example, when I started here early in my life, you know, I wanted, in Arizona, we didn't have a mosque, so I wanted to take my kids to a Catholic school. And then the bishop, you know, said, we have to really, is it okay with your kids to go and do like, they take 15 or 20 minutes in the morning to sing for Jesus. you know. And I told him, why are you doing that? He said, the reason we want to do that, we want to implant Jesus in the hearts, in the blood of our kids, you know. And I was really impressed. Our job here is to implant Islam in the hearts of our kids, in the minds of our kids. We need to raise a good generations of Muslims. Let's a little bit, you know, set aside the politics, what's happening, you know, overseas and all of that stuff. We have really to have good leaders in the community, good imams to be involved in every single issues, you know, like visiting patients in the hospitals, visiting, you know, homes, doing committees, being involved, galvanize the community, that kind of thing.
Thank you.
We need time to wrap up.
We need time to wrap up. So, how many are already here? We have one lady and then...
Are we ending it?
Yeah, we... I think it's supposed to go to 6:30, but if it's okay, we can probably go till 6:40, because the next session is this in hall. So we should be okay.
Okay. So I can... We're going to have to pick one more solutions.
So two or three and then...
Yeah, sure. Huh?
Just wanted to share, uniting the masjids, what we have done in Chicago is we have Iranian, Arabic, and Urdu speaking masjid, five masjids. So sometimes we wait for the leadership to come from top down. We can also approach our ulema and say that we want a program, one program at least together with all the five masjids. And so we have done five programs, one for men, families, one for interfaith. We did one for women on Bibi Fatimata Zahra's birthday. And we did, now we are doing a camp together. So sometimes we don't have to wait for leadership to come from top down. We can approach our ulema. And no ulema will say no. So this has worked last year. We did five programs together. And then the interfaith group is, this is the best time to form an interfaith group. And we have found, mashallah, this is the sixth year we have doing the interfaith group. And now, alhamdulillah, they call. So if we form an interfaith group with Jews, Christians, and Muslims to start with, they invite us, we invite them. And then what happens is the schools are approaching the interfaith groups to say, we have a problem in a school, can you go and address it? So, and then recently we had a school which has children with interfaith families. And then these parents are saying that, can you come and teach us about Jews, Judaism, Christian, and Islam? And we are even open for these children to follow any faith that they choose. So the time is very good right now for interfaith. It can be any better. And thanks to Trump, it's working good for us.
Last comment, maybe at the back.
As-salamu alaykum. I just want to maybe make one quick comment that could be considered a solution is if we can do more programs collectively with the mindset that that there's other people out there and other people that may have ideas, and not thinking that we have a monopoly on haq, that we have a monopoly on any kind of solution out there. We should be open to working with other people within reason. As long as it doesn't compromise our principles, we should understand that there's plenty of resources within our community, whether it be our fellow Muslim communities that are around us, or even non-Muslim communities, that as long as you're working on the principles of Islam, you can reach out and have a much broader impact and allow yourself to be open to diverse other groups. I mean, there's no other way to say it. So having a little humility in yourself, and that even if you think what you have is the truth, the Ahlul Bayt, inshallah, our efforts are following their path, that shouldn't be a solo mission. We should be trying to reach out and work with the other groups that are around us, inshallah.
Thank you very much. And a loud salawat for the audience for a very good negative, positive, and solutions. So, and I request the panelists to kind of wrap it up, and we'll start down under and get to US.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Thank you so much for all your comments. I feel bad that I have to take the mic and make you guys stop speaking. I wish you guys could go on forever, but we don't have enough time.
I heard a lot of the problems that were mentioned. I'm going to focus on the problems that are within the Shia communities themselves. So I heard all of the difficulty or the suggestions and difficulties with working with other sects and interfaith groups, and those are very important. But because of the lack of time right now, I only want to concentrate on one issue. I heard a lot of comments about certain places being social clubs, about converts not feeling that they're looked at in a suspicious way, the Khoja community's resistance to an indigenous community, for instance, and so many, other examples that I heard. One of the solutions that I wanted to mention, alhamdulillah, a few people touched upon as well. So that's actually a really good thing that I'm just going to reiterate what you said. So basically, what I think one solution would be is to have programs and to work together with other groups and other races, other centers, other cliques or whatever, to foster a relationship with each other. So the brother, for instance, mentioned that. Now, I'll give a couple of examples. One from the life of our Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So the Prophet, of course, we know was wise, had a very large amount of knowledge, but he would still go to his followers and ask them for suggestions. So for instance, at the time of war, he would ask people of different groups and different ethnicities and ask them what they think they should do, right? When he did that as a leader, a lot of you mentioned leadership, by doing that, he made them feel a part of the ummah. He made them feel like they have a role. Right? The Prophet could have just dictated. Right? He knows best, of course. But he allowed people to have a voice. This was very important. I heard people mention that. Another example from social psychology that I can mention that I was studying recently. There's a very interesting study where a Pakistani academic in the States in the 1960s, he created a camp and sent kids to this camp, and at the beginning of the camp, divided the kids into two groups, and these kids didn't know each other before. So once he divided them, they became different groups. They started having this us and them attitude, and they actually started competing with one another and putting one another down. The way that he got them to, come together as a one unit, was to work together on a program that would, where they have a common goal. So one of the sisters mentioned, that she got into contact with a group of reverts and other sisters with the common goal of getting closer to Allah. And that even though she is from a different background, because they both worked for this common goal, they gelled together and they were able to foster unity, right, within diversity. And I think that's a very important point, where if we're able to have programs, this is something that you could do bottom up and also try to encourage the ulama to do top down, that we just encourage these joint programs working together for a common goal. This is one possible solution to the problems that we face. And inshallah, I'm going to pass it on to Sheikh Osama to conclude.
Inshallah. How much time do we have?
8 minutes.
All right. All right, so Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. We're looking now for solutions, and still, obviously, there was more that brother... Eventually, we have to end the program. So some of the things that I was able to gather from the audience that I wanted to repeat, for us to have a take-home message. One of them was the idea of having a sense of responsibility and believing that we can affect change. There's sometimes, at least with some of the youth who I've been in contact with, sometimes the youth felt that the elders ran the community, and they couldn't do anything, so then they would just kind of sit back. I don't have responsibility. But if I feel that I'm listening, and we've seen that brothers and sisters can be encouraging, can be mentioning, sharing ideas, so feeling that sense of responsibility, and each one of us standing up to do our job. So for instance, there are some masajid, the sisters say that when you go to these masajid, nobody smiles at you. Sisters, even when you try and say salams, they'll turn their face. But let's say that our sisters, our brothers, they feel a sense of responsibility. When I see a new face,
I am the first person to pass salams. There's more reward in starting the salams. Passing the salam, speaking to the person, making the person feel comfortable. So that's one. And also standing up against institutionalized racism or discrimination. There's sometimes in some communities where we don't even talk about it anymore when somebody is mistreating somebody based on their race or color or ethnic background, speaking up against that. Another one that I'd like to suggest for brothers and sisters just practically is the idea of going for ziyarah, and particularly the ziyarah of Arba'in in Iraq. When you go for that experience, brothers and sisters, you'll see this. The Shia over there treat you so well just because you're a lover of Ahlul Bayt. You feel ashamed to call yourself a Muslim. There's things that you wouldn't do. If somebody paid you, you wouldn't wax somebody's shoes. But another Shia is saying that I'm going to do this simply because you're a follower of Ahlul Bayt. You actually get embarrassed at the level of service, and all it is I've seen, they would start crying. They ask the brother, where are you from? Indonesia. They start crying. Serving, right? So valuing one another, that each one of us are valuable. So valuing believers, and then service of believers, and then witnessing that, so then inshallah we can repeat that here. The when you see the love of Ahlul Bayt in practice, it is so amazing. It's more than Hajj, right? The gathering. Anyhow, that's one. One of the issues for us to talk about is, why is it that communities split? There are sometimes communities, and it's usually the nafs. Right? We aren't able to see the bigger picture, the value of staying together, although it's difficult. It's easier to split, and I have a community who only does things the way I do. But is it more important, is it better for us to remain together as brothers and sisters, deal with the difficulties, keep trying to move forward, so to study that, and then after that come up with solutions. Otherwise, what you see in some communities is each person opens up a little center right next to the next center. Right, so within a stone's throw, you have 3, 4, 5 centers. People all knew each other in the beginning, but now we're all at odds. And that's nafs. That's not because of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Another one would be that we change our centers to being places where we're actually trying to do tabligh of Islam. Why do I say that? Sometimes in some communities, you feel that the community is not looking to have Muslims 5 generations, 6 generations, 10 generations onwards. If that was the case, then English and making sure our kids understand the Quran and the words of God and the words of Ahlul Bayt, that would be more important than having a majlis where, for instance, I feel comfortable in. If I'm thinking of 10 generations down the line, I want to make sure my children are better Muslims than myself. So English being a priority instead of something that's tolerated, right? That's something at least for us to suggest. Education and really teaching people what Islam is so that we can answer those questions. Sometimes in some centers it seems like religious entertainment. And more than that, if other people knew what we say in some of the majalis, people would definitely not come to the path of Ahlul Bayt. I don't speak Urdu, but I remember being in a center in one place on the planet Mars, and the speaker was over there, and the stuff they were saying about the Ahlul Sunnah, I can't understand Urdu, but I could understand that much. Okay? That's not bringing anybody to the path of Ahlul Bayt, mocking certain individuals, and right? So instead of teaching people what it is that Islam says, educating people so that we actually know what it is that Islam says. One of the things also, this is now goes back to those youth feeling a sense of empowerment. For some of the youth, they also don't want to take positions of leadership because, as I said, sometimes in the masajid, amongst the leadership, it's like sumo wrestling. Amongst sometimes the leadership in the community, it's a hereditary position or a family position, and it's just people don't even want to, it's not even worth it to go there. But another time we say that actually, if we can have righteous leadership, meaning the youth who are going are not going for their nafs and their ego, but righteous leadership to effect change under the leadership of an alim, under the leadership of a righteous alim, as brothers and sisters have mentioned, then after that, joining in the community and getting, and us pushing and promoting, getting religious, practicing people who know how to work as a team, who are under the leadership of an alim, to actually take positions of leadership in the community so we can start affecting change from the top. So we're pushing from the bottom, but we're also pushing from the top. Feeling a sense of responsibility towards new Muslims. right? Every time you see somebody who has embraced Islam, that it's not just, okay, alhamdulillah, you've converted, let's move on to the next one, let's get a new one, right? But rather, this person, they've left their family, sometimes they left their job, the job that they were doing was haram before, marriage now, right? So all of these things, and we know that some of the people everybody won't be perfect, but overall, if we want to see Islam progress, then we have to have a policy actually for taking in new people and embracing them. People mentioned the idea of inviting others to attend our centers, right? So sometimes if we can do this, that we don't want to change the message so that we're only catering to try and introduce Islam to other people. I don't want to say that. But at the same time, having a message that non-Muslims could listen to and also be educated on, right? The way that we speak, meaning if we could do this, that sometimes we actually feel comfortable having a majlis for Imam Hussein and inviting non-Muslims to also be there. There's some things that they won't get, obviously, because we're talking about concepts that are for us solved already, the 12th Imam, right? But there's a lot that they could gain from. But if we weren't insular, if we weren't afraid of others hearing our message, then bringing others in, inviting them, especially for the month of Ramadan, breaking bread with our non-Muslim neighbors and colleagues is something that we could do. And the last one would just be the idea of self-purification in some centers also. It's not just about education, but also we want to make sure that our centers are places where actually we're actively engaged in purifying ourselves and correcting some of the flaws of the nafs, right? So for instance, the centers don't just want to, our goal isn't not only to get people to do the wajibat, but actually to elevate themselves spiritually. And people are looking for that. And in order to do that, brothers and sisters, one of the things that we need to do in every community when we start, and I'm saying this specifically for our youth and those who are not youth, or people like myself who are older and still consider ourselves youth, wherever we go in the community, to protect those who are most vulnerable, I'm talking about our children, and to create Islamic schools wherever we are. Schools where the environment, so we have righteous leadership, we have our teachers who are interacting with the children, actually bringing them to Islam by their example, but our children are safe to practice Islam. So we actually have to think about that. Now we know with the whole homosexual agenda and how actively they're promoting some of these values, that it's an actual need. Sometimes we feel concerned about even putting our children in some of those schools. So inshallah, we'll end with that. Is it possible for us to just read the dua of the 12th Imam and then end the session, inshallah?
Bismillah.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Allahumma kun li waliyika al-Hujjat ibn al-Hasan salawatuka alayhi wa ala abaih fi hadhihi as-sa'a wa fi kulli sa'a waliyan wa hafiza wa qa'idan wa nasira wa dalilan wa 'ayna hatta tuskinahu 'adaka taw'a wa tuma biha tawila.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Ahmed Bakar and Sheikh Abdul Ghani. It's really very audience. It was a very interactive session. Please stay right in here because our next session is starting at 6:45 right here. And if you don't know your neighbor, please check what city they have come from. That's a good way to know each other.